New York, we want to keep y'all up to date on the local news that's happening all around the country. New York, a fare beater turned into four people shot, including a police officer. Take a look.
Big story tonight also involves violence, this time on a subway in Brooklyn. A man with a knife this afternoon going after two New York cops, and they fought back with guns.
It happened in the Brownsville area of Brooklyn and started when the armed man evaded his subway fare. The situation ended with the suspect, a police officer, and two innocent bystanders shot.
We're learning that one of those subway riders right now is in critical condition. Another worrisome crime in a subway system so very essential to making New York City run. Eyewitness News reporter Sonia Rincon live outside Brookdale Hospital in Brownsville with the latest. Sonia.
Bill, all four people who were hurt in that wild confrontation are recovering in the hospital tonight, and we have learned that two of them are in critical condition. Not the 73rd Precinct police officer. He is being treated here at Brookdale for a gunshot wound right under his arm. It just missed his vest, and he is in stable condition tonight, along with one of the bystanders. Now, the other bystander is in critical condition, along with the suspect who is in police custody over at Kings County Hospital. Now, remember, he had a knife, not a gun. I asked the NYPD's chief of department if what happened to the officer today should be characterized as a case of friendly fire.
I don't like to use that term, friendly fire, but absolutely, we believe at this time that our officers were the only ones who discharged weapons.
Ambulances and police descended on the Sutter Avenue L station just after 3 in the afternoon, taking four people to the hospital. A 73rd Precinct police officer, a man who'd allegedly charged at officers with a knife, and two innocent train passengers.
I'm especially concerned about bystanders, people who are just trying to get where they're going, being the victims of harm in this situation. But let's not forget why this started. It started because somebody wanted to come into the transit system with a weapon.
It started at the entrance when police say the two officers assigned to transit detail followed a 37-year-old man up the stairs who hadn't paid his fare.
The officers are asking him to stop. The male is refusing to stop. At a certain point on the platform, the male, he mutters the words, "You know, I'm going to kill you if you don't stop following me."
That verbal threat would become a physical one as he pulled a knife from his pocket.
They give numerous commands. The male basically challenges the officers, "No, you're going to have to shoot me."
The confrontation moved inside a train that had just pulled into the station. And that's where police did shoot the man after tasering him didn't work. The bullets that flew inside the car and onto the platform also striking passengers, a 26-year-old woman and 49-year-old man, and the 40-year-old officer. He was rushed here to Brookdale Hospital, where the mayor and new interim police commissioner paid him a visit and blamed the knife-wielding suspect they called a career criminal with more than 20 arrests.
So, a couple different things that we can take away from this. Number one, I do 100% blame this on a criminal, and that you shouldn't be skipping your fare, which then escalated into you threatening a cop and saying that you would kill him. Number two, it is unfortunate that the innocent bystanders, because they did try to taser him at first and it didn't work, and then the innocent bystanders are the ones that suffered. And then number three, I would love to see if there's any footage that comes along with this to see whether or not the cops was just a bad shot or what that was, or if the, I don't know. But it's just all bad. It just seems like New York is just 100% going down the drain. In addition to that, the mayor, as you've seen, right, chief's counsel, and everybody around him is starting to resign. Check it out.
Mayor Eric Adams' chief legal counsel abruptly stepped down over the weekend in a sudden and stunning move.
Yeah, they put out this notice late Saturday night. Adams said her resignation is not connected to the FBI investigations involving his top aides over the last few weeks. Good Days, Lizette Nunez is at City Hall this morning. A lot of questions for the mayor this morning. Lizette, what's going on?
Sure is, in Tashani. Well, Lisa Sorenberg was the mayor's fierce defender. She was on the job for a little bit over a year. And we also have to talk about the timing of all of this. Far from ideal, given all the shakeups currently happening inside the Adams administration. The mayor says that Lisa Sorenberg left on her own accord.
She loves this city, and not only has she been just a great advisor and friend and confidant, she brought a lot of experience to the administration.
Mayor Adams speaking out after his counsel and chief legal advisor stepped down over the weekend. Lisa Sorenberg was the lead attorney for City Hall for 13 months. In a statement, she writes, "I am deeply grateful to Mayor Adams for giving me the opportunity to serve the city, and I strongly support the work he has done and continues to do for New Yorkers." Sorenberg reportedly went on to say in a resignation letter to the mayor, "I have concluded that I can no longer effectively serve in my position. I wish you nothing but the best."
Who just does that? Who just randomly resigns out of nowhere? Especially right after all of his top aides are starting to fall. People are calling for different resignations. She only been on the job for a year and she's already starting to resign, decided to resign. Come on, man. Come on. Come on. Who just does that?
The mayor was asked if Sorenberg is involved in any investigation and why her resignation was so sudden.
First of all, I'm going to say no to that because I don't want any innuendos. And I'm not going to go into our private conversation.
Sorenberg is a former Manhattan federal prosecutor. Her resignation comes just days after New York City's top cop, Edward Caban, also stepped down. The FBI seized the phones of then NYPD Commissioner Caban as what is believed to be an ongoing investigation into influence peddling in New York City's nightlife involving his twin brother, James. Several other top officials are also being separately investigated by the feds. Some local elected leaders believe the continued chaos at City Hall is a distraction.
Every day it seems to be something else that is concerning. And the question now is how to make sure that we have a city government that people have faith in and believe can continue to govern. So,
hey, I got a question for y'all really quickly. My nephew was telling me about this movie that he's seen, and this is completely unrelated. And then we're going to get into the next story. My nephew's seen this movie over the weekend, and I guess it's called Am I Racist? I actually plan on seeing it this week because I want to see what he was talking about. And he was just telling me about it and things like that. And I'm wondering, right? I'm wondering, considering that movie, because I see them, and the shirt says Black Fathers, and, I see all of these other cultures and races that promote their race. Just a question. At what point do we progress through society enough to where we don't label everything as racist? Because if white people was to do it, if white people marched down the street, because I remember when they made a big deal about Nashville and all of that stuff. If white people marched down the street and they got a shirt on that says, "I'm white and I'm proud," or they have the American flag or whatever it is, right? If white people do this, are we okay with it? If white people allocate certain institutions only primarily for white people, not what we label it as a PWI, if white people say, "Listen, I'm white and I'm proud," and all of this stuff, will we then label it as racist? That's all I'm asking. Because I'm tired, honestly. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. You cannot think that you solve for a problem by being the thing that you don't want somebody else to be. It's a lot of people saying no, but it's a lot of people get upset when they see a group of white people all together and they automatically say, "Hey, where's the diversity, equity, and inclusion in that group?" It's a lot of people saying no. Let's continue. Last but not least, Mayor Johnson, who has largely avoided the limelight, is now starting to respond to the city's $1 billion this year, $1 billion shortfall next year projected, but it's probably going to be more. Take a look.
Hi, Pat and Dina. The mayor and his administration only have a few months to address this year's gap, and they're taking dramatic steps. Now, after their visit to Little Village for a ceremony, the mayor provided only a few details about the latest decision. The city is currently facing a nearly $225 million deficit, which is projected to go up to about $1 billion next year. On Monday, the mayor's budget office announced a series of budgetary restrictions, including a hiring freeze. Additionally, the city will impose limits on non-essential travel for employees and will cut overtime in areas outside of public safety. This morning, following the unveiling of the refurbished Little Village Arch ahead of Mexican Independence Day, Mayor Brandon Johnson took questions. He was pressed on the hiring freezes, and here's what he had to say.
We don't want to have to cut any services. I made that very clear. You know, I've been an organizer, I've been an elected official, and I know the damage that has been done over the course of bad decisions. But as a city, we have to be prudent and fiscally responsible in this moment. Look,
so let me ask y'all, how fiscally responsible can you be when you spent over $600 to $700 million in a migrant crisis? How prudent, because now people are starting to lose their jobs. Everywhere in Chicago or everywhere surrounding Chicago, they are raising property taxes egregiously. They are raising property taxes egregiously because you guys have been so fiscally responsible. Did you see him run his resume down? He's been a community organizer, a school teacher. Who would put a community organizer and a school teacher in charge of a multi-billion dollar budget? Now, they were trying to basically prevent them from even hiring with a 2,000 officer shortage. Budget deficit, $600 to $700 million spent on migrant crisis, or on housing, and ongoing, right? Projected to be well above $1 billion in Chicago alone spent on the migrant crisis. And he's talking about being fiscally responsible. And I think that y'all deserving. Y'all deserve all of the aldermen. Y'all deserve all of the mayors. You deserve everybody over there. You know why? Because this is the person that y'all voted in. Y'all voted in Lori Lightfoot based off of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're not just going to lay this at the feet of Brandon Johnson, even though he's completely incompetent. Y'all voted in Lori Lightfoot. Chicago has a historic track record of voting in the worst possible candidate every single term in election. Chicago. They already know that if you could just get past the primary, whoever it is already going to be mayor. Don't matter if you're fiscally responsible. Don't matter about your police presence. Don't matter how much you march. Don't matter how much you complain inside of City Hall. When you finally get the opportunity to determine who's going to be your leaders and who's going to manage your budget and who's going to take y'all and put y'all first, guess what you do? You vote against your own best interest every single time. I do not feel anything. I feel nothing for the people of Chicago. Is that wrong? Is that bad? Is that wrong? Is that bad? I feel nothing. No empathy, no sympathy, no compassion, no nothing. No eggs, no grits, no meat, no bacon, no sausage, patty, or links. I don't feel nothing. I feel zero. You know why? Because you can solve for the problem that's in your own city. Y'all have the ability to engage. I cannot tell you how many people that I've read that tried to reply to some of the stuff that I was saying and saying, Anton, I don't care. I'm not voting anyway. I don't care. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to try to pick up and move and take their same mentality over to wherever it is that you live. They're going to pick up and move and they're going to come to Oakland. Well, not Oakland. Oakland people is trying to go somewhere else too. They're going to go to Miami. They're going to go to Atlanta. They're going to come to small town USA. They're going to try to take advantage of the opportunities because they see Ohio failing, right? They're going to try to pick up and go to Nashville, anywhere in Texas, Houston, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, wherever it is that they can spread out. They're going to run and say, oh my God. No, 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 no. We should have a freeze. Not a travel ban, but a freeze. A freeze of moving permanent residences in the United States of America over the next 8 years. You should have, wherever it is that you voted for, whoever it is that you voted for, we should have a freeze, a ban. Everybody should be required to stay where they at and be forced to fix their own neighborhoods instead of run from it. Nobody should have the ability to be able to move and change residences unless it was for, you know, financial purposes, like you found another job or something like that. We should have a freeze, a moratorium, the same moratorium that y'all had when y'all could not pay rent, we should have a freeze and a moratorium when it comes to your ability to move from the place that you don't like no more. Nope, stay there.
I've already saved the taxpayers already $200 million. $200 million. But we have areas of need, not just in community safety, but education.
Now, it's still unclear if the hiring freeze will go through next year or if there will be additional sacrifices.
Additional sacrifices, I'm betting.